Welcome to the Visual Impact Podcast, bringing you conversations and insights from the world of film. I'm Rob Newman, and today we are talking to experienced documentary self-shooter Sarah Stevenson about her recent work and what it's like shooting with Sony's new handheld camera, the Z280. Sarah is currently Emporium Productions Head of Development. Her most recent credits include hit series Inside the World's Toughest Prisons for Netflix, Secrets of Your Supermarket Food for Channel 5, and Harry and Meghan, Royal Rebels for Lifetime. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you for having me.
Can you start by telling us a little about your background and the shows you have worked on in the past?
That sounds great. So I'll just show you first slide I've got here. So tell you a bit about my background and sort of shows I've worked on over the years. So I've been in telly for about 10 years. I specialise in factual entertainment and access documentaries. So here's some of the shows that I've sort of worked on recently or over the years. Some of them are hopefully you'll recognise. Inside the World's Toughest Prisons is a big Netflix series. We're actually now filming the fourth and fifth series of that. Which is great. I filmed on the first three series of that, and I'll talk more about that later. That's a sort of factual format where our presenter, that's him there, Raphael Rowe, spends a week in some of the world's toughest prisons. So it's not very glamorous, but I have been to some quite interesting places. So I've been to Honduras, Brazil, Belize, Poland, all sorts of places in their maximum security prisons, which is a bit of an eye-opener.
Yes.
very different to that was Harry and Meghan, Royal Rebels. That was a Lifetime, so that's in the US, a fast turnaround show that we did. So it was actually something that my team got commissioned, and we made it in literally a few weeks, and it was a shoulder piece to the Harry and Meghan movie. So from prisons and bars to gilded photo frames. and then Secrets of Your Supermarket Food, that's for the UK market here, that's Channel 5. That's a big food consumer show that we made for the first time last year, but it did so well, that's coming back this year. Actually got a total of 5.2 million viewers that tuned into the series, which, viewing figures here was really good. And that was, it's not sort of scaremongering, but it was much more about, do you really know what's in the food you eat? So we did like a test about breakfast on the go and what has more sugar in it, a bowl of Frosties, a Weetabix drink, one of those like Belvita bars, or a pot of porridge, you know, that you had hot water in. And gobsmackingly for everybody, the pot of porridge had 21 teaspoons of sugar in it.
No.
Yeah, so not as healthy as you would maybe think. And then I've done lots of sort of on the go shooting, blue lights, trauma stuff, specialised in lots of medical filming for a while. So I did An Hour to Save Your Life, did one of the first series of that. I filmed the neonatal special. I did a whole year filming midwives for the BBC. So all sorts of stuff, really. But but I love it. There's nothing else I'd rather do, even when you're sort of outside in the rain filming wintry GVs or stuck in hours of traffic after a shoot. This is what I love to do.
Is it what you always wanted to do right from when you were at school?
No, I wanted to be a vet. So I have filmed vet series, so at least I've ticked that off a little bit. I wanted to be a vet, and then I did languages, so I speak French and Spanish, and somehow ended up working in telly.
That's a strange sort of curve, isn't it?
It's really, really, really odd. But everything I've sort of learned has been on the job. So everything, you know, started off as a runner, doing lots of location, always obstock stuff, and learned to shoot, and then later learned to edit and everything like that. But it's always sort of been on the hoof, and I had some great sort of PDs and execs and series producers that have helped me over the years to sort of be where I am today. So I think that's great in the industry that it is like that, and I think it still is. I wanted to talk a bit about a couple of shows in particular.
Yep.
And the first one that I thought would be good to talk about, that's me there with our presenter Raph, on Inside the World's Toughest Prisons. That, as you can see from the camera, slightly giving it away, was an FS7 shoot. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk a bit about that first, because Rob and I were talking about how do I select gear? What am I going to take for my obstock shoot? And I think that it's quite a complicated shoot that we had. So that would be interesting to talk about my process before I then go on to talk about the Z280. So we'll talk about that and these two shots here. That's from Belize, and that's a kit setup, and that's some presenter PTCs we were doing, and that's from inside Belize's maximum security prison. So I'll go through all of the kit we took and why we decided to take that in a minute. Mm-hmm. And then the other program that I'm going to talk about is a pilot that we shot for Channel 4. Did that at the end of last year, beginning of this year. And there are two presenters on the left-hand side. One of them's a expert, he's a health inspector, and the other one is a restaurant owner. So the presenters for that show, and that was a weird hybrid of a show between an obstock sort of factual show and a features makeover. So that was quite interesting, particularly in terms of what kit we were going to take that was going to sort of meet both.
Bridge all of that.
Bridge all of those, but be practical.
Yeah.
That was a real eye-opener for me, not only because of the Z280, and I'll talk about all the amazing things that I learned about that, but also actually about filming in these takeaway places. It will make you think twice about where you order from.
Yes.
That was somebody's kitchen floor, where they were keeping all of the boxes that your food came out of.
Lovely. <Yeah. laughs> So far, we've you put me off porridge and you put me off takeaway.
I know. Fine. I know. I'm so sorry.
Cross them off as we go along.
Just putting everybody on a summer diet. It'd be fun. Rob and I were talking earlier about, what affects my gear selection. How do I know what kit to take? What kit, is worth pushing for with a production? And these are sort of the six questions that I always ask myself when I start on a production, because I think unless you, as everybody knows in obstock, it's hard to know exactly what you're going to be filming, but you have to plan for every eventuality. And this, sure, I find is a good way to, hopefully, it's worked so far, touch wood, touching the table, that I've been all right. I'll just run through these and sort of the questions that I ask myself. So the first thing is, what is the narrative? If you have to sort of work out, in two sentences, what is this production about? And I think that's really key, because if you can't say that, then you don't know what the focus needs to be of all of your stories. And, that might affect your kit choice. So is it something that's going to be really first-hand POV? Might you need body cams? Or is it something where you're going to need long lenses or primes, depending on, the content? That's a key question. Why are you telling this story? More and more now, I'm sure it'd be good to hear from you guys, but in obstock shooting, there has to be a reason why. Why now to film this series? And, that's a question to ask. Is it that this is the first time this has ever been filmed? Is it a new way of filming? Is it 4K? What is the reason to be making this show? And that often then affects your gear selection, if you can answer that. Where are you filming it? Might sound like a bit of a silly question, but do you know the location? Will you see it beforehand? Are you only going to find out when you turn up? Is it going to be one location, lots of locations? That always says to me, how much gear can I take with me? How portable am I going to have to be? Who are you filming? Is it just a presenter? Is there going to be, do you just need one radio mic? Have you got two main presenters? Is it obstock and you've got no idea how many people you'll be having to film or capture sound from? This is a question that we always want to know is there going to be the budget, and will there be other shooters? Is it just going to be you?
Yeah.
And then this isn't really a question, but it is really important, is to remember that there is a budget. So you might have this big, long wish list of kit to be able to, answer all these questions about, I might need that or I might need this, but be prepared for production to turn around and go, well, you can only have one lens. So what one are you going to take?
Yes, out of the 43 that you wanted, which one do you want? That's right.
So then I thought we'd go through, if that's all right with you, Rob, the sort of kit choice that I took on the prison series, because that was an FS7 shoot ultimately.
Yeah.
But I'll talk about how we sort of came to that, sort of asking those questions and, how that sort of affects gear selection and stuff. So this is from the series. So that's on the left-hand side. That's Raf, our presenter, in the holding cell. That's in Brazil. So that's where inmates are held for up to 48 hours before they're actually admitted.
Right.
So it is what it seems. It's a concrete cell with a slotted roof. And then there's a hole for a toilet around the other side. And that's it. There's no bed. There's no nothing. But as you can see, there's the lighting in there. We were only lit by the sun coming down from the ceiling. So, what is the narrative? So this is something that, we had to ask ourselves at the start, and we knew it was going to be, you know, presenter led. It's all about Raphael Rowe finding out by spending a week in some of these prisons around the world, what is life like for inmates? What's it like for the guards? It's going to be immersive. You know, he's going to be admitted like them. He's going to be treated like them. He's going to do guard training like them. So I'm already thinking, okay, it's going to be a lot on the hoof. We know roughly what the scenes are going to be, but we've got no idea what's going to play out.
No.
Why are we telling this story? So for Netflix, the big thing is that they wanted it to be 4K. They wanted it to be visceral. They want to feel like you're in the prison with them, that you can smell it, you can feel it. So already just from those sort of two questions, that's ruled out a whole load of cameras. Because
yes.
It's got to be 4K,
yep.
And it's got to be portable.
Yep.
So you're already thinking, right, okay, there's not that many options left now. How can we go with it? And then next lot of questions, you know, where are we filming? So as you can see in that photo, that's in Belize. So it's really dark inside the cells, totally unlit, no electricity. And then it's bright sunshine outside. So you think, I'm going to be going from light to dark. How am I going to cope with that?
Yep.
When are we filming? So, yeah, it's day and night, 24 hours that we might have to shoot. So I'm thinking, do I need to take lighting with me? Yeah. You know, how am I going to cope, you know, with filming at sunsets? Do I need to take filters? You know, what else might I need? Mm. So that's sort of influencing what kit choice to take. Who are we following? So we know it's Raph, and who else might he be talking to? And this scene here, this is from the first part of the prison that prisoners go to in Belize. And actually, as you can see, they're on their hands and knees. That's their only way to be able to look out of the cell. It's a bit like dogs. It was bizarre.
Yeah,
but yeah. So that's how they handed food. That's how everything was handed. So that's how Raphael on the right-hand side gets down to talk to them. So we were thinking, okay, well, we're not going to be able to get through and mic them. So, you know, it's thinking all of this kind of stuff in advance, obviously in prison. You know, normally if you're filming contributors, you go, just pop a mic on you so then you can get that close sound. It's not going to be possible here. So how are we going to sort of tackle that?
So did you know all of this before you left?
We knew some stuff because we'd had like recce things through, like we'd had some recce photos from our fixers out there. But just knowing the sort of situation, you know, prisons are dangerous places.
Mm.
Some inmates will be locked up. You won't be able to get to them. So how are you going to work sound?
Yeah.
How close can you get? Is the top mic going to be close enough, or do you need a boom? And budget for this, you know, you'd think, oh, soundie would be great. For some of the shows, we were able to take a soundie, but for some, for security and safety, the crew had to be so small. It was literally just a two-camera shoot and the presenter and the fix to translate, and that was it.
And that was it, right.
So, yes, there was cross-shooting on that because it's quite time-limited. So we actually filmed each episode in about 10 days. Which is kind of amazing.
Mm.
So, yeah, but we needed two cameras because otherwise it would have been slightly impossible.
Yes.
So there was a Raph cam. So somebody was always filming Raph for about 7 days.
are these stills here from stuff that you've shot?
So some of them are from stuff I've shot, but then some of them are actually from the A7S as well. So that's
right.
Our stills camera that we take. We also take it for, at that time, we took it for our second camera. Our third camera, I suppose, for really compact spaces.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get onto it in a minute. That might now will change now that the Z280 is out on the market, because actually there wasn't anything else that was of that size that we could sort of take with us that, mm-hmm. you know, you could capture sort of footage that could be of, you know, comparable quality.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of both. But the FS7 was amazing. We shot this in log. The range that we had, it was just, I mean, it really was. And in the 4K, when you see it, it's, I mean, thank God we had a data wrangler. I will say that. We just have them waiting back in the office to work, back in the office in our hotel room to work night shifts to wrangle it all, because it's an insane amount of footage.
Yes. Yeah.
But it was great. So in the end, the kit that we sort of took after answering all those questions, you know, the who, whys, whens, what, we took two FS7s and the lenses that we ended up taking, knowing that we'd sort of be able to change lenses some of the time, but for the most part, due to sort of schedule and security, it's not going to be loads of time to like swap between lenses. We also didn't have any extra pair of hands really to carry lots of stuff with us. It's hot there, it's 100% humidity, you're on lots of antimalarials, you don't want to be lumping around massive backpacks. Also, you can't take stuff into prison sometimes in case people steal stuff out of your backpack. All things that you probably never think about often if you're like planning what gear to take. So everything had to basically be what you could carry on your person. So, yeah, so we took the two FS7s, and we generally kept as like a kit lens for most of the day, was actually the Fujinon 18-55. is actually the lens I would pick most of the time to okay. take out on the f/7 if I know that I'm not going to have time to change lenses that much. Like the EF lenses on the Canon, but I love the fact that the iris is on the lens, and that's a huge selling point for me. I think it just makes everything so much more seamless.
Yep.
So that was our general sort of workhorse, but then we took the EF zoom lenses for all the GVs and things like that, and primes when it was really dark or we were in really sort of tight spaces. We chose not to take a rig, as you can see in that shot there, with that's me with a camera on my back, mainly because it was just going to be so tight, and because we hadn't been able to go to a recce ourselves out there for some of the shows. The PDs were able to go out to recce the prisons before, but we hadn't, sure. so we had no idea would we actually be able to get through the spaces with a rig on.
Yeah.
And you know, we all know it's a bit, if you suddenly have to take the rig off, it's, I mean, where do you leave it?
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't want to leave that in a prison. But no. So we didn't take a rig, but I'm a bit old school about rigs. I, you know, they've totally saved my back, and I have used them and I will use them again. But for some stuff like this in prisons, where you want to try and blend into the background as much as you can, it's quite hard with a big rig on. We took just two panel lights with us that had V-locks on, so they could work just you know, same batteries as the FS7 when we had to light scenes that were otherwise wouldn't have been able to, sure. to shoot at all. And then sound for us on this, we just took normal radio mics and top mic. And actually the thing that I don't think many people use them, but maybe you can tell me, is a wireless boom. It's something that I always take with me because I think it's, you know, nowadays that, you know, sound is a luxury, but we took a wireless boom because then we could just give it to our fixer. But it just meant that you never actually missed any sound. So that was a big thing that we did for these people that can't actually get to in the prison. The wireless boom was great, and the advantage of that is that then you just get the receiver and dial it in, and then you can give that to, if you've got the fixer who's trying to translate and they're trying to get out all the white noise to everybody else, is actually another bit of kit I would definitely recommend taking.
That really is a good tip.
So that was our FS7 Inside the World's Toughest Prison shoot. And I definitely think now, having worked on the Z280, which we'll talk about in a minute, that that should have been a camera that we would have taken with us, you know, instead of maybe the A7S, something like that, because there wasn't anything else. You know, we couldn't take anything smaller, which we could have done with for when you're filming inside prison vans or inside really small cells, because just sometimes with the FS7, it's just so long. That actually, it, just the camera itself, sort of getting in focus and stuff, it was, you know, it was quite hard. So then I'm going to talk now about this bated breath, Z280, and the other production that I've recently used it on. So this, these two clips are from the Channel 4 pilot, the Takeaway Nation shoot that I use the Z280 on. It was a brand new show. It was actually something I got developed and got commissioned, so I knew from the start exactly what I wanted the content to be, what we'd promised the commissioner. So I don't know how much people know about how the development process works, but they're the people essentially like me now that you have to blame for when they said, yeah, we want these really tight close-ups of, like, you know, a mouse eating cheese in somebody's fridge or a cockroach that's like stuck in some egg fried rice. I'm the person that's probably put that in a treatment and got it commissioned, so that's why then they say this is the shots we need. Now you know who to blame. Hopefully, being a shooter, I try not to ever suggest things for shows that I don't think are possible, probably sometimes to my own detriment. I'm probably too practical, but I think that's important, because sometimes if you overpromise, it's just not going to be feasible. And that was a bit of my worry, actually, I will say, as we sort of go through this, when I started working out you know, the key scenes and all the stuff I would need for this show, I didn't actually think that there was going to be kit that that could answer all those
all the questions.
Which we'll talk through, and hopefully people sort of listening will go, gosh, yeah, I'm not sure about that either.
Peter's got quite a good question on that, because he's saying, how much does the final transmission company influence the equipment choice, the lenses and media, etc.? I mean, is it more that, you know, do they say you have use a particular camera, or
no?
Is it...
they don't say what particular camera or anything like that. They have like a specification, normally, Peter, that they give you. It has to be of a certain codec, or it has to be of a certain quality. Like that. So like with the 4K thing with Netflix. So that's their sort of input, really, and it's just on the budget often. You know, it's what can we afford to take, and what's practical. So no, they honestly, they don't mind, as long as you deliver what you promise. They don't mind what you film it on.
So they give you guidelines, and then it's up to you.
But I mean, that is an important question, because if you don't meet their guidelines, then you're essentially invalidating your contract. so that, you know, that your production company have made that you're working for with the channel. Right. So they will have like percentages often. So particularly if you're doing shows where there's mini cams and things like that, obviously they'll never be the 4K. And we use a lot of mini cams on prisons, you know, to put them inside vans or inside cells and things like that. And you often get a percentage, which the program will give you. So normally it's like 20-25% that can be not to that high res 4K or whatever, so that can be other footage. But it's quite strict. But
quite sensible. Brilliant. Okay.
Go ahead. Same sort of questions, exactly the same questions that I asked myself when I was trying to pick my kit for the prison series. This was for the takeaway series. So what was the narrative here? Having, like I said, worked on the development, I knew what the narrative was. And it was, you know, well, we thought really compelling, still do. But that Britain is booming with takeaways. I don't know if you knew, but no, but 13p in every pound spent in Britain is spent on takeaways. So every pound that's spent, 13p is on, is on a pret sandwich, or, you know, it might be on a Chinese takeaway or a pizza. And that's, it's sort of just going up exponentially every year. So this show that Channel 4 commissioned us to make was about finding the best and the worst takeaways in town. And why do they want to tell it? Well, their sort of reason for the why now was that with the boom in sort of takeaways, there's been the boom in delivery apps. Everybody knows, like, I'm sure everyone's got a login for Deliveroo and Just Eat and Uber Eats.
Speed dial.
Yeah. And so they wanted to tap into that, you know, that people are so far removed from their food now that we actually are ordering takeaways from places we've never been to. So we've got no idea what's behind the kitchen door.
Yep.
It could be something amazing and it's mouthwateringly delicious, like, you know, like the Ugly Delicious shows that Netflix have and stuff like that. Or equally, it could be more sort of Gordon Ramsay kitchen nightmares.
Yes.
So they wanted to do that. So they wanted like a Gordon Ramsay kitchen nightmares Just Eat sort of generation show.
Did you find that there was a correlation between how much you were paying for it and how bad the food was, or not necessarily? So you could fool yourself into thinking, I'm paying lots of this, so it must be.
Yeah, it's actually quite scary. And then the thing that that they were really interested in is like the reviews. Like we're a sort of a review nation now, so that you might have 5 stars on TripAdvisor. There's actually a takeaway near where I live that was featured in Time Out, and it was like best Thai place to eat and all that. And I'm a bit obsessed with this now, having made this series. It's definitely made me think differently about where I eat takeaways. But I googled the food hygiene score, because actually that was part of making this show, is it's not a legal requirement at the minute to display it in your window. Right. So this takeaway, it's this top Thai takeaway, they're saying you must go to it, you know, you have to make a reservation, and it had a 0 food rating out of 5. So having filmed in these places, let me put it this way, a 3, there can be a it's funny their wording, but it's between active and prehistoric mouse infestation. So it means they'll have definitely found mouse droppings. This is in a 3. You could have found mouse droppings that are over a week old. So a 0 means that there is some serious errors. It could be that there is an open drain, like an open sewer in the kitchen. You could have that people are drunk at work. There could be like cross-contamination. It's not just like people not washing their hands after the toilet. Okay. It's like people like handling raw chicken and then putting all your chips and things and all your doner kebab salad. Lovely. That you're going to eat fresh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really serious. It's like some gobsmacking stuff. So, food hygiene scores, Google them. That's what they said they wanted of the content.
Okay.
But anyway, that said to me, right, okay, so it's going to, I'm going to need to get all these close-up details. I'm going to need to see, you know, the brilliant stuff, but also the slightly grim. So how did that sort of intro affect my kit selection? So it's something that I do, like I was saying before, you know, I pick out my key scenes. I start my shooting script. What are the elements I'm going to have to film to make this story work? So knowing that it's almost like a show of two halves, that the first half was going to be all this obstock filming going behind the kitchen door, and then the second half was going to be more of a features sort of mashup, where one of the takeaways is deserving gets a makeover. But the stuff I was doing was all the obstock stuff, because that's my specialty. So I was following on the coattails of real environmental health inspectors as they do real surprise inspections with our presenter, Gareth. So the takeaways have no idea that we're coming, and they've got no idea they're about to be filmed. And they've got to seek all their permission on the go. So it's lots of thoughts going through my head, right, I'm going to turn up to these people's properties, you know, these businesses, they're going to be quite nervous that they're getting inspected, and then they've got to agree, and they can say no to let me in, but obviously it's my job to persuade to let them to let me in. So I'm thinking, right, I need to be as discreet as I can. What's the smallest camera I can have? So I'm already thinking I can't have a rig because no one's ever going to let me in a kitchen, particularly if it's a bit dodgy with that on, because they're going to think I'm sort of, you know, beaming it back to a newsroom or something. And I'm thinking, well, who am I filming? So I know I've got my presenter and I've got the inspector as well. So that's two people that I really need to have radio mic'd. But then how am I going to record the takeaway owners? How am I going to be able to listen in on what they're saying? So I'm thinking, oh God, well, I could probably do it with a soundie, but it's a pilot. So I know there's no money for that. It's just me and a runner. So I'm thinking, well, I don't really know if I can, you know, it's not the runner's job to have to do all the sound as well. Actually, having been to these places doing the access, I know how tiny the kitchens are, they're galley kitchens. Would you fit a soundie into boom or something? I'm getting a bit nervous about how much you're going to record the sound for it. Where will it be? Like I said, you know, these takeaways, it's tiny kitchens. It's going from sort of like daylight into like some horrible sort of, you know, like tungsteny light, no windows. We'll never have seen any of these places before and we'll probably not be allowed back in. So I've got to get everything while I'm there. Time of day, it can be day or night. Can also go from day to night while you're in there because inspections can take hours. And we were filming this in the winter as well. So I'm thinking, probably going to need at least a top light or something, otherwise I'm not going to be able to get, you know, any sort of piece to cameras after about, what, 5 o'clock. Crew, so it was going to be a solo shoot. It was just me, so having to get access on the go and do all the sound, shooting, all the directing. And then I had my runner with me that was just driving me from place to place. We were following everyone because I could do a lot of things, but that was about, I was like, I'm not sure if I've got any brain power anymore left for that. And then the budget, it being a pilot, it was a small budget, so we wanted to save the budget for the makeover, so we tried to sort of pare down the obstruct shooting as much as we could, really. So after all of that, I was thinking, God, I actually don't know what camera I'm going to use for this. Normally I would go to an FS7, having used it a lot recently. You know, it's, I would say, I don't know what you think, it's everybody's go-to, really.
Yes, but, I would say,
You know, for obstruct shooting like this. But I knew, I mean, I still think that the FS7 is a big camera. As much as you try and scale it back, if you're not used, if you're not expecting it, it's a bit of a surprise. So I thought, that's not great, but, you know, what other options have I got? And then there's always, you know, like with the FS7, you've got your limited zoom with whatever lens you put on. And I knew that I probably couldn't come back to this place, and you don't want to be, you know, too obvious that you're filming all of the often quite bad stuff that they're doing. So you want to be able to crash zoom in. I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be quite hard on that. I mean, I'm thinking, well, I can actually record the four audio channels, the three that I know for sure I'm going to need. I can do that on the FS7, but I can't mess about, really. You know, I have to go into the menu to change them, all the things. It's going to be slightly complicated. I'm thinking, but what else is there? You know, C300 I could use. That is smaller, but doesn't have any of the extra audio. So what really is there? And I was talking to a colleague of mine, and I said, you know, basically what I need is like a PMW 200, but that's up to spec, you know, that can film like, you know, like the Super 35, like of an FS7. And he said, oh, it's funny you should say that. But there's this company, so I'm not even sure if it's actually available yet, because Sony hadn't launched it when we started talking about this. He said, but there's this Sony Z280 that's coming out that I think might be hopefully, you know, the answer to your prayers. And as I sort of go on now, you can decide what you think, guys, if it was. Yeah, it was, you know, at that point, having all these things that I needed and not really knowing what kit to do, it was a bit of a worry. But I will go on to talk a bit about the Z280 now and the top and what intrigued me about it. So the initial thing was, so this friend of mine going, this new Z280, it's just same size as the PMW 200, it's just got more buttons on the side. And I was like, oh, okay, great. It's compact. You know, I filmed on them loads before, I'm sure we all have. And, you know, it's not going to freak people out, particularly if they're not, you know, expecting to see a camera crew. I'm not going to need a rig, so that's all good. I'm thinking that's ticking the boxes. I'm thinking, but it can't, you know, surely it can't have all the other stuff. It can't have all these audio channels. It's tiny. And they said, no, it's got four audio channels. You can have, you know, you can have this, which I hadn't used before, and I'll talk about that later, but it's a hot shoe on the top of the camera. You can put sort of Sony's own sort of wireless radio mics into that. And you can even adjust them all on the side. and we'll talk more about sort of audio later, but that was brilliant that you had all these audio wheels and it was all, you know, totally like manual and you can adjust everything. It's got the fixed lens, 17 times zoom, much like the PNW200, so you can do all your crash zooming in, you're not going to miss anything. And I was thinking, well, I mean, surely there's got to be the compromise. What is it? Is it that it's, you know, it's can't shoot XAVCI, it's not going to be able to cut as well with the FS7, which we were thinking is probably going to be the rest of the show when we did the features sort of makeover. And then I was like, well, maybe I just need to get my hands on it to find out a bit more. So this was my next thing. I was thinking, well, it sounds great on paper that it's got, you know, it's the smaller size, it's got the zoom lens, it's got the audio. But in terms of its capability, what am I going to have to compromise on it being this size? And actually, I was really surprised. I don't know if any of you that have what you've read about the Z280 so far, what you've heard, but I mean, I was really surprised, and it's quite techie as well when you read about it, that it's got these 3.5-inch sensor chips. You think, well, what does that really mean? You know, how is that gonna?
Yeah, because as you say, you can read specs and benefits, but what does it mean to you, as you say, as a shooter? What does it mean to the program? You know, does it mean I can have high contrast ratios? That's really what you're interested in, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, oh, it's 10-bit this, and you're going, oh God, I don't, you know. And you know, I like the techie stuff as much as the next person, but until you actually see it and you see the footage side by side, it's hard to know for sure. But yeah, so this, you know, the Z280 can record in the XAVCI. You know, it's the same sort of format as the FS7 can, so I knew that then actually, okay, well, if we are going to cross shoot, or at least we're going to have a mixture of footage in this pilot, it's going to be the obstock and the features that it's going to work, it's going to be the same quality, like the guy asked at the start, Peter asked, that you know that you are going to meet that spec that the production and the channel have asked for. So it's going to be high res, you know, whereas like the PMW200, that wouldn't have worked because it wouldn't have been high enough quality. Sure. Whereas obviously now we're not dealing with that, and actually I found out, you know, it even shoots log, which I thought was amazing. Couldn't believe you could have something that's, you know, as small as this camera shooting S-log, and also HLG, which I hadn't really sort of come across before, but I don't know if people have, but for those of you that haven't, it's the hybrid log gamma, so it's almost like the S-log that doesn't need grading. I think it's probably an easy way to explain that.
Funny.
Yeah. So it could do all of that. So I was like, oh, great. Okay, well, this, you know, this sounds perfect. But I would advise everybody before you go, yep, sign it in, book it in. Let's have that for the shoot. Is that you do some pre-production tests with it. Because if you don't, you might end up in a bit of a mess. Not that I did with this, but there was definitely some things that I sort of found out on the weekend that I took the kit home when I got one through from Sony, actually, because there were so few out on the market that they sort of lent me one of their test demo ones, which was great, just sort of see how it worked before we decided if we were going to go with it for sure. And I can't recommend doing pre-production tests enough as like an obstock shooter. I think so often now with shooting schedules and everything is, you know, so much shorter for prep time, but it is essential. You might not get paid for it, but you'll thank yourself for it when you're on location, because you know, as an obstock shooter, that camera has to be an extension of you. You can't be working out where the buttons are, assigning things on the go.
No. Yeah, I mean, you don't want any surprises, do you, when you get there and think, oh, I didn't realise, I thought it was just this and this, or if you've got lots of hot shoes, oh, I can use them all at the same time, or no, you can only use two, and that sort of thing, which we're covered. So yeah, as you say, it's fundamental, but it's one of those things that of the list of I've got to do, possibly that's the first one to go, isn't it? Which
100%, and I've been guilty with that as well, you know, but it is something that you know, having done these pre-production tests with the Z280s, I talk about, if I'd not done it, I would have been in some serious problems, I think, on location, or having to speak to my exec, you know, trying to call them at the weekend, which they don't really like to be called on the weekend, to talk about, you know, oh, I might have to do this instead. How does that, you know, sit with you guys? So these are some pictures from the pre-production test I did. That's Z280 in the office at work, and that's me having a go with their sort of gamma display assist setting for LCD screen, so that if I was going to shoot an HLG or S-log, that the LCD viewfinder, I'm just checking out how that worked. And then that's shot on the end is actually of the peaking, which I did have some problems with the firmware, which I'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, you know, on the pre-production test, the camera, it performed really well. You know, practically it felt a bit heavier than the PMW200, which I thought was quite interesting. The lens definitely feels heavier. Don't know what people think if you've managed to get your hands on it, but it does feel weightier, but then I think that's why when you look back at the footage that I did put it back into my TV, you can tell it's crisp, you know, it's a better quality sort of piece of glass that you've got, and you can see that, and you can see, even though I wasn't shooting 4K in the sort of test footage, you can see that having that sort of capability, that 4K sensor, it does deliver. Yeah. Don't ask me why, I'm not sure about the technology why, but it definitely does deliver something that I think is better, even if you're not using the camera to its full capacity. Battery life was great. It's probably runs a bit faster than like the PMW 200 did. I think that's probably because it, you know, has all these sort of capabilities that's why. So that might be something to think about. It was the first time I'd ever used Hot Shoes radio mic mount, so that was a bit of a fiddle to go into the menu. I definitely had to get the instruction manual up on the internet to work out how to do that. But actually, once you've done it once, it was really easy. But it was perhaps not the most sort of like logical way to do it. But we'll talk more about audio later. But actually, the menu setup is the same as the FS7. So if you are an FS7 user, it is actually exactly the same, just with a few new features. So it was good. Pre-production test went well, and after that I was like, yep, let's definitely use it, let's definitely take the Z280 out for a run and see how it goes on the shoot. So a couple of challenges that I had, I talked about them briefly in the pre-production test, but I think most of them have actually been fixed now in terms of firmware, but was actually that the peaking didn't work at all in HDR, didn't work in HLG or S-Log, as you can see in that picture. Yep. It was like snow. So you couldn't tell what was in focus and what wasn't in focus. And I mean, peaking is something that I use on and off, but I knew with this takeaway shoot that wasn't going to be time to have, you know, like nice composed shots. It was more like, well, you know, sort of get them as you go, but you had to know that what you were getting was going to be in focus. So, but in standard, it was fine, which is what we shot in the end, because we weren't shooting log on the FS7 for later. So standard was completely fine. But that firmware has been fixed, I've been told. And then the other things were sort of similar challenges that you had on like the PMW 200, if you guys can remember filming on that. Like you will need Rycott shotgun mount to put in for your mic mount so that your fluffy doesn't dip into view in the lens. Because like the kit mic that they always send with these, I think we were talking about this earlier, it's never powerful enough for obstock filming.
No.
So if you do want that big top mic, you will need to lift it up on the mic mount. And the other thing is the LCD, is the viewfinder. Same problem that we had on the 200 and on cameras like the C300, that if you're outside in the sunshine, you are not going to be able to see that screen. So that's something, that's a Hoodman there. That is probably one of the top pieces of kit, I would say, to keep on you. It's always in my very trendy kit bum bag that I have on location with me. But they're about £20. Like I said, it's called a Hoodman. It's just Velcro that goes round. But it means that no matter how bright or sunny it is, you can actually always see your footage. It's great. You know, it's totally saved my bacon on shoots before, particularly even, you know, when I've been on an FS7 shoot. My eyepiece actually broke on the last day filming in Brazil on the prison show, and I was thinking, God, I don't even know I'm gonna be able to see the screen. So I just got that out, gaffed it on, it was good to go. So that's something that I would definitely recommend buying. Also, for obstock filming, if you do have one on, it means people can't see what you're filming, which is quite nice if you don't want people looking over your shoulder.
Yes.
And without sort of being obviously trying to hide what you're filming, it's quite a nice way to be a bit more discreet. I think that was it really in charge. The other thing, which we will talk about a bit later, is the audio, is that the Hot Shoe radio mic mount is quite easy to knock, and it's quite sensitive. So if you do knock it at all, even if it still looks like it's plugged on, you will lose all the sound, because unless it's totally flush, it's not going to record sound. So if you ever suddenly wonder, like, oh God, it's all gone, it's probably you just need to push it back on. It's a bit like, you know, turn it off, turn it on again. And that did fix it. But how did it actually perform on the day? And I have to say, like, overall, it was brilliant. I actually couldn't fault it. You know, the practical issues that I'd sort of found out on the pre-production test might have been a problem if I'd not sort of worked them out before, like, you know, the peaking issues or the mic dropping into shot. All those kind of sort of things, you know, not being able to see the viewfinder. But because, you know, I sort of thought about that in advance, all of those sort of issues had gone. And, you know, actually, you know, the camera delivered exactly what I wanted. You know, it did give me that zoom range I needed. So I'm following my presenter around and the other inspector, and then one of them across the room suddenly finds, like, you know, mouse droppings. So that's in the right-hand side. So that's Gareth after he's found something. And then on the right-hand side is a fish and chip plate. So we actually found some mouse droppings underneath the kitchen counter. Prehistoric, though. They've been there over 7 days.
All right.
Because Gareth feels them and he tells you how old they are and things like that. It's nice and grim.
Lovely.
But so having to go from a wide of him talking there to then the close-up of his hand to a mouse dropping that's probably about the, probably about 2 centimetres. So having to be able to suddenly zoom into that to get to tell the story was, you know, was key. And actually the camera was great for that. You know, also in low light, so getting underneath that kitchen counter to be able to find all the stuff that they had there. They had like sleeping bags and loads of weird stuff underneath there. And it was all really dark, so I had to throw some gain in, but that was fine. You know, didn't have any noise. That worked really well.
Okay.
So yeah, actually the camera performed sort of as I'd hoped, really.
Brilliant. It shows the value of the pre-testing.
Yeah, totally shows the value of the pre-testing. So I just wanted to highlight a couple of things that I thought were actually great about it, rather than sort of talking about them generally. And this answers the audio questions as well. I actually think the audio is one of the biggest selling points of this camera. Maybe for better or for worse, it actually you know, enables you to have like 4 audio tracks that you're recording at once. So we all love to have a soundie, but as budgets go and get less and less, it's harder and harder to take one.
Yep.
Take one with you. So this was what was amazing about the Z2H. I've actually put up, so you can see and compare, the FS7 Mark II, and it's 2 sort of audio wheels you've got there, and then the Z280, which you can't quite believe it's got that much more stuff on it, but the 4 audio wheels that you can sort of manually control. That was brilliant. So on the camera, you've got 2 XLR slots, sockets as normal as you'd expect up front.
Yeah.
You've got the internal mic, which I'm sure probably, you know, most of us obstructions don't actually use, but that is still there. And then you've actually got 2 hot shoes on the camera. But the interesting thing, the guy was asking earlier, is you can't use both of the hot shoes. That's what I found in the pre-production testing. You can only use one of them. To go to either channels 1 and 2 or 3 and 4. And they say, so Nick, I asked anyone, well, why have you got 2 then if you can't have all sort of hot shoe radio mics? And they said that one of them is for like a light or something like that. Or, you know, you can either have your wireless radio mics on the front hot shoe or the back hot shoe. But if you do want to use all 4 audio channels, you have to use the 2 XLRs.
Wow.
For it to be able to work. So the setup I had was I had a top mic on the front and then just a normal Sennheiser radio mic going in, like an XL, just the XLR, and then Sony's wireless radio mics, which are slightly more expensive to hire. I will warn you, or do warn the production, but that's, you know, there is no other option.
No.
You know, they've made sure of that. but they are great, and then they essentially give you, it looks a bit like a T-bar mount, and then the 2 Sony wireless radio mics go into the same hot shoe.
Right.
And then you can record them all onto that. And, you know, it was great. And then listening in is slightly tricky. You can either listen in to channel 1, channel 2, channel 3, channel 4, or actually you can mix them all. And the mix all is quite good. It's a bit disconcerting because it's not like what you're used to, you know, as obstruction 2, you have one person in one ear and one on the other.
Yeah.
So you do have to get used to that, but it was helpful. And like I was talking earlier about having the wireless boom, didn't take a wireless boom with me on this, but I did take a wireless receiver just for my runner. And basically I tuned them into the presenter, gave them the frequencies to the presenter and the other inspector. So that basically that they're logging as you go because they can't come in some of it.
Right.
Or that they know who doesn't want to be featured or who they need to get consent for. So that's probably a tip I would say to take, is because they're really cheap to hire. You know, often kit hire companies will just throw one in for you. And it just means that then at the end of the day, when you're knackered after having shot for 10 hours, you don't have to then go through all your footage to work out what you filmed.
Yes.
Somebody else has already been logging it for you.
Yeah.
So definitely get one of those. Also, I think it's great, you know, for sort of more junior members of the team because they feel like they're involved and they learn and they can see how you're asking and, you know, what content you're covering and why. So that's probably something else I would say to take. But that's the audio, which is good. The other thing is the variable ND filter. Very exciting. And I feel like it's a bit like once you've gone with an ND filter, you can't go a variable ND filter, you can't go back. It makes you think, why did we put up with this?
Yes.
Like 3 clicks.
Right.
I know, it's just mad. It's brilliant. So, you know, it goes all the way, I think it goes away from a quarter of an ND all the way to 1/128. And it's seamless. It's amazing. It's just, it totally transforms filming, particularly on a show like this, where you are going from being outside in the sunshine to like, you know, a dark kitchen, in and out, in and out.
Yeah.
And it, you know, we've all seen that sometimes, if that's where the great bit of sync is and it's through the clunky bit of the ND change, there's nothing you can do about it. Yeah. Often the edit don't understand, but now there is no excuse. You can do it. And there is auto ND, which I didn't use. I'm sort of like do everything manually, but I had a play with it in pre-production and that did seem to work quite well. So if you were slightly less experienced or, you know, wanted to give it a go, I've heard good things about working with that. Probably good news for FS7 users is this is on the Mark II, I think, now,
yeah,
the variable ND filter. Yeah. So I think it looks like something that Sony are going to roll out across cameras. But yeah, if you've not had a chance to have a go with it, I definitely would, because it's a huge help. A couple of other things that are really interesting about the Z280 is this face detection, face priority, which I don't know if any of you have heard about before. Wasn't something that I used on this production, but it was something I had to play with in pre-production just to see how it would work. And it's my poor partner, bless him, he has to always be sort of like either like a pretend contributor or, can you just walk there for me, or just move this? So he's probably in loads of like background of my pre-production test footage, yeah, this sounds great. You know, we've all had to do those sort of tracking shots of presenters, or, you know, they're walking through a busy crowd and you've always got a presenter who, you know, often is doesn't want, you know, either you're time constrained or they're expensive and you can't have them there for long, and you're just hoping that you keep it in focus. This gets rid of all of that worry. It's really easy. You just go into the menu, you sort of click on their face when they're with the select button when they're in your frame, and that's it. The camera will do the rest. It will literally follow them through a huge crowd. So again, it wasn't something I needed on this production, but I can
see
you know, the value of that, you know, for experienced shooters, as well as, you know, if you're in a hurry, as well as people being sort of sent out to do stuff thinking, God, how am I ever going to keep them in focus?
Yes, I think it's moved on an awful lot from when it used to, on all cameras, all manufacturers used to hunt very much, didn't they? And you'd get sort of someone else and it would start to focus on there and it was all over the place.
But no, it's great, and it even works, you know, if they go behind stuff. So if they went behind a bus, it would pick them up out the other end as well. Gosh, no, if that works. But yeah, it's really, really clever. The other thing that, you know, Rob and I were talking about as well is its Z280's wireless capability. Wasn't something that I needed on this, but I used part of it, which I'll talk about. But, you know, I was only in Harrow, so I didn't need to wirelessly send it all back to Camden. But I can imagine, you know, if you were out, particularly doing our prison show, be able to send proxies back and things like that would have been great. So that was something I did use on it, is the proxies that the Z280 makes really easily. I'm not sure if it's something that all the cameras do, but the setup, because it's, you know, they're trying to send them wirelessly, it's really, really easy. So it's just like an extra tab that you put on in the menu. Yeah. It's like proxies on, put your SD card in, and you can pick, do you want them HD or, you know, 720 or whatever, and then it's just really easy just to, you know, send those over the internet later so that your exec can have a watch, or it can go straight into the edit.
Yeah.
So that was really helpful. I think that Sony have thought about the fact that people need to be making proxies, because this footage is getting so big now that otherwise there's no way for people to pull through it and to log or things like that. So that, I think, is a really handy tool that they've sort of put into that.
So I think those workflows have changed over the years, particularly Sony, but other manufacturers as well have actually cottoned on to that, and so they're doing things that help to save time, help to save money. So it's very good.
So that's good. And then sort of summing up now towards the end of our sort of chat, is there, if you're still considering Z280, have I not managed to convince you of its sort of benefits? I suppose that the sort of, you know, to some of the things I would say is just to give it a go. You know, is you know, we can all sort of be slightly snobbish about cameras, and, you know, I love a nice set of lenses as much as the next person, but there are some times where big kits, you know, like the FS7, if you've got, you know, like a big 70-200, you know, EF lens on, there are situations that is not going to work, or something like the Z280 could work better, and I think that's the thing to think about, is what is the best kit for what you're trying to film. So I think, you know, the Z280 is going to be great for not just experienced shooters, you know, that are trying to find an alternative to the FS7, but also for people, for beginner shooters, because, you know, like the PMW 200 before, the Z280 is a more forgiving camera. But I think with all this other stuff that it has now, you know, the audio channels and the ability to film in 4K, that it does deserve a seat at the table for experienced shooters to consider as well. Because I think, you know, particularly for like that obstock filming I was doing, where you're on the move, you've got no idea what you're walking into, you know, you're probably not going to be able to go back. Having the ability to be able to get everything on that camera, not change lenses, was great. And I do think for that sort of on the move stuff, if you're doing blue flashing lights or something that's really remote, or compact environments like in a helicopter, or even stuff where contributors aren't expecting you to suddenly turn up and film them, something of this size but that can deliver this quality, is something that should be really considered. So I think that's my sort of, to sum about the Z280, that it has got, to sort of listing through its sort of top features, it's got, this great sensors and the same recording codec and everything as the FS7. It can capture 4K footage. It can do S-Log and HLG. It's got this incredible 17x zoom lens, the variable ND. I found it's really good in low light. I haven't had noise problems with it personally. And crucially, it's super compact. There's no need for a rig. It's a great camera for people that do need to have something that's sort of lighter to handle.
Yeah.
So I think that's my sort of Z280 stuff. I've got some things to share about what I'm shooting next and whether I might be using it on those. But I don't know if there's any other sort of Z280 okay. questions that we want to ask.
Using the center crop for HD.
I haven't used center crop for HD. I can imagine that would be all right. The only thing that's probably not going to be is I was talking earlier about the commissioner saying that your certain amount of your yes. footage has to be, yes. like 75% has to be of a certain quality. I imagine if you do crop in on HD, the picture will be fine, mm-hmm. but actually it probably won't qualify for that really high yeah. res thing. So I think anybody watching on a normal TV probably wouldn't notice, but I do think it's something you'll have to check that it's not downgraded the footage so that it doesn't meet the shooting requirements.
So the camera's capable of it and it looks nice, but you have to work within the parameters.
Sometimes it's a bit of computer says no, but it's yeah. What does it then read out as in the edit and then, sure. When it goes through post. But
Okay. Assignable keys, do you use program and what do you program as?
Assignable keys. Yeah, no, I do use assignable keys. I'm trying to think what I program them in as now.
I guess it's one of those things that you just naturally do. Most cameras, when you get them, you always...
Yeah, everyone has a fiddle of the things that they put in. I think often I put on things... I'll tell you things I don't put on as well as things I do put on. I often put on things like white balance if I need to be able to get in to dial things like that in. If I did put audio on this one, as one so that I could move between the monitoring channels. So if I wanted to go from channel one, channel two, to 3, 4 or mix all, that was an assignable I put on. I also put on magnification just so that I can quickly check my focus and things like that. They're the sort of assignables that I'd put on, but it depends what I'm shooting because I might change them around depending on what the show is. I can tell you something that I don't put on assignables that I know some people do is some people put the quick assignable link to the format. I don't know why, it seems bonkers to me, but I've known people that assign so that you can go into where it is on the camera because it always is a bit of a faff to get through to the format section. So I've known people put that as a thing, as an assignable, but it terrifies me. What if you accidentally knock that and you come out all your rushes? But I would definitely check that people haven't done that as assignable. If you get it and you get a camera and you're, you're kit sharing or something like that.
Yeah, it's all your
rentals. I have seen that and I just think it fills me with dread and terror.
Yes, stay away from that. Sure. Moving on. What's the audio limiter like?
I think it was fine, actually, the audio limiter. I didn't have, actually with the...
I would guess that if you happen to think about it, then it was fine.
I think it was. Yeah, didn't have any problems with it actually. I really do think the audio on this camera is one of its top selling points.
Yeah, main features.
Might upset Soundy Sam, but it is good.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks very much, Sarah. That was really, really interesting, and I think it's good to have someone who looks at it from perspective of actually shooting something rather than a technical perspective, which often we get, particularly from manufacturers, clearly. So it really brings it home, what's useful, what's not useful, and little golden nuggets like what you would take, what you wouldn't take, and the hoodie and all that sort of thing. I think it's really good.
And I think it's no two productions are the same, and I think often when you turn up to a show, particularly if your production manager has worked on something that she's come from before or they've come from before, that they might think, okay, well, I'll order the same kit in, or they might have a relationship with a kit company and go, well, we'll just get this in. But actually make sure you're the person that's got to film it, and you're the person that's responsible for bringing that footage back in the best way it can be. So work through it, work through those those questions, make sure that the kit you have can answer all of those beats, really.
Brilliant. Okay, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much again, Sarah, and thanks everyone for listening. See you again soon. Bye-bye. That was documentary self-shooter Sarah Stevenson talking about her experiences of shooting with Sony's new handheld camera, the Z280. You can find more podcasts, blogs, and exclusive visual impact content by going to our website, visuals.co.uk.